On March 19th, 2004, a 17-year-old female disappears from her job at the Black Lantern Inn in Montgomery, Vermont. She has never been seen again. What could have happened to this young woman? You're listening to the Mysterious Bruce Podcast, and tonight we bring you the case of Brianna Maitland.
Welcome to a deep, dark, dank, moist recording studio somewhere in the bowels of Georgia. Coach, I know it's been a minute since we've been together. I got to travel to the great state of Florida. Didn't have any Florida man stories for you, but I did enjoy myself on the beach.
Yeah, you visited some brewery?
I did, and Bog Brewery down in St. Augustine. If you're ever there, I highly recommend you go. They have a taco truck in the parking lot, and you can take it inside the brewery, and it is amazing.
That's always a plus. Taco trucks tend to make everything better.
They also have two food truck parks down there, and one of them has a barbecue joint, and they have a bacon cheeseburger with mac and cheese on top, and it is amazing.
I'm sold.
It was good. It was $11, but it was good.
Sounds worth it to me.
So we have a new patron at the $20 tier.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
Joshua Davis.
I recognize that name.
Yeah. We were number 175 in Ireland.
That's not bad.
And we were 68 in Mexico. That was as of Monday. So, good news on the front of publicity. Well, that's enough of the BS in the housekeeping, so I guess we'll get into it. Tonight we are drinking Harpoon IPA from the great folks at Harpoon Brewing. Ring. It is a pale ale, Indian pale ale, thus the IPA status. They first started brewing it in 93, and it's styled after an English IPA with American hops. It's citry, refreshing, and perfectly balanced. All right, ladies and gentlemen, now we get to Brianna Maitland. Brianna was born in Burlington, Vermont on October 8th, 1986 to her parents, Bruce and Kelly Maitland. She was the youngest of two children, and she grew up on a farm in East Franklin, Vermont, not too far from the Canadian border. She was known to her friends as Bree or a Bee, and was well-liked and a very well-rounded young woman. She was known to be an avid reader and had trained jiu-jitsu for several years.
Oh, well, okay. That's cool.
On her 17th birthday in 2003, she decided that she wanted to leave the family farm and be closer to her friends who lived 15 miles away and attended a different high school than she was attending. Wanting even more independence, she enrolled in her friend's high school and decided to move out from her parents' house. Now, her living arrangements were not what you would call stable. She basically couch surfed between friends' homes, and while her parents were not too happy with it, they decided to tolerate the situation since she was maintaining her grades. But in February of 2004, she had dropped out of school, but still wanted to go to college and had enrolled herself in a GED program. And at the time, she was living with her childhood friend, Miss Jillian Stout, in Sheldon, Vermont. And that's basically about 20 miles west of Montgomery. So in January of 2004, she was at a party, and Brianna got into an altercation with a female friend of hers, Keely LaCrosse. Now, while the exact reasons for the fight is unclear, people at the party had stated that Keely thought that Brianna was flirting with her boyfriend, and according to some reports, Brianna had gone to Keely's boyfriend's truck and was sleeping in the passenger seat, which pissed Keely off even more.
That's pretty weird.
Yeah. Keely and one of her friends woke Brianna up by beating on the window and challenged Brianna to a fight. Brianna tried to defuse the situation and tell her that she was not trying to get with her boyfriend, and Keely was not having it, and so she commenced to knocking the piss out of her a couple of times. But everyone stated that Brianna did not defend herself.
Which is strange. If you're trained in jiu-jitsu, I mean, you are more than capable of
stopping
defending yourself.
Her in the face. Some of her friends talked her into filing a criminal complaint against Keely. And as a result of the fight, she did go to the hospital where she was treated for 2 black eyes, facial cuts, a concussion, and a broken nose. So this was more than a slap.
Yeah, she was punched several times.
So on the morning of March 19th, 2004, Brianna took and passed her GED test. And this was a huge deal. And to celebrate this, her and her mother had decided to have lunch together and was going shopping that afternoon. According to her mom, Kelly, Brianna had been in good spirits and the two had spent a lot of time discussing her college plans. Now, they were shopping and waiting to check out when Kelly states that something in the parking lot caught Brianna's attention and she told her mother that she would be right back.
Yeah, this is a very strange event right here.
So Brianna went outside, and when Kelly was done checking out, she met Brianna in the parking lot, and she states that Brianna was noticeably shaken. And not wanting to pry, Kelly did not ask what was bothering her, but she said that it was very evident that she was upset. So Kelly dropped Brianna back at her friend's Jillian's house where she was staying between 3:30 and 4 p.m. on March 19th, 2004. And this was due to Brianna having to work that evening. Now, before leaving Jillian's house, she left Jillian a note saying that she would be home that evening after work. Now, Brianna worked 2 jobs. One was a dishwasher at the Black Lantern Inn in Montgomery, and another one was she was a waitress at KJ's Diner in St. Albans. Brianna left the note and headed to the Black Lantern in her pale green 1985 four-door Oldsmobile Delta sedan. That is a tank on wheels, ladies and gentlemen. According to Brianna's coworkers at the Black Lantern, when the shift ended, there was nothing that really happened that night, and Brianna had not received any phone calls. She didn't make any phone calls. No one came to visit her. And after they had closed up for the night, they remember asking Brianna if she would like to have dinner with them, but she declined, saying she was tired and she had to work the next morning at her second job at KJ's Diner in St. Albans. It was 8 degrees that evening. 8 degrees.
That's fairly cold.
In March. Brianna did not make it home that night. Now, Jillian assumed that she went to stay with her parents. After 3 days goes by and Jillian still had not heard from Brianna, she decides to call Brianna's parents, and she finds out that she hasn't been to their house either. Upon learning this, Kelly, her mother, becomes concerned and started to call Brianna's friends and both her employers. Unfortunately, no one had seen her since the last night she had worked at the Black Lantern. So Kelly calls the local authorities and she reports her daughter as missing. Now, after the report was filed, one of the, and I don't know if it was the actual deputy that took the call or it was a deputy walking by someone taking the call. Needless to say, somebody had an epiphany because police had a tip. They had learned on March 20th that law enforcement was called out to Route 118 in Montgomery, and a pale green Oldsmobile Delta sedan had been backed into the abandoned Dutch Barn house off of the road. It appeared to be an accident, a single car accident. Several passerbys had seen the car, and one even stopped to take pictures of the car because it was in such an odd position. Now, keep in mind, this is before everyone had a cell phone. This is 2004. And come to find out, the people that took the picture had been skiing and had one of those disposable little Kodak cameras and just decided to take a couple of pictures of it because they thought it looked odd. Which, that's the only pictures that I know of the car.
Thankfully, they did that. I mean, because if they hadn't, we'd have no evidence, no proof, nothing. We'd have not a thing.
Now, the officer that took the report headed to the barn and started looking around. Inside the passenger seat were two of Brianna's paychecks, uncashed, totaling $150. On the passenger side floorboard was a styrofoam takeout container with a half-eaten burrito. Must not have been very good.
I don't know why that's funny, but it's funny.
Also inside her car was her medicine for her migraines, her driver's license, her contacts, and most of her clothes. Now, next to the Dutch barn house was a woman's fleece jacket, but this did not belong to Brianna. There was a broken necklace on the ground outside of the driver's side door. They also found loose change, a plastic water bottle, and a lime wedge on the trunk.
A lime wedge?
A lime wedge.
Okay.
And a lot of... Well, we'll get into it after this. Now, the car had been backed into the barn with such a force that it had dislocated one of the lower boards of the barn and had actually wedged the bumper up on the foundation. So the bumper is stuck on top of the concrete foundation where the rear wheels of this Delta Oldsmobile sedan is actually off the ground, and this is a real rear wheel drive car, so even if they had wanted to, I don't believe they could have gotten the car unstuck. Now, the one thing to keep in mind is the keys to Brianna's car were missing, but all of the doors were unlocked, and this was not electronic locks. This had to be manually unlocked. Each door had to be manually unlocked. Now, the keys have never been found to this day. Now, going back to the lime wedge, people have theorized that this was some kind of calling card or someone had a drink at the crime scene, and this was them signaling that they had done something. Da, 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 da. She worked at a restaurant. And it could have been as easily as someone was taking out the trash and a lime wedge somehow made it next to her car, or some prick threw his drink out and a lime wedge landed on her trunk. It was 8 degrees outside. That lime wedge is not going anywhere.
I mean, I agree with you, but it's crazy.
It is one of the odder little nuggets that is in this case. Now, assuming that the Oldsmobile was simply abandoned by a drunk driver, the trooper who first came upon it arranged for it to be towed to a local garage. And when they checked for who the vehicle was registered to, it came back to Kelly Maitland, Brianna's mom. But the state troopers did not notify her of it being impounded, because the paychecks indicated that Brianna was more than likely the driver. Hoping to inform her that it had been found, they went to the Black Lantern Inn, but it was closed. So they go back and visit the Black Lantern again and spoke with some of Brianna's co-workers. The co-workers told police that Brianna had left the night before between 11:30 p.m. and 12 a.m. So now, at this point, law enforcement thought the car had simply just been abandoned, but they had no idea that she was actually missing. So on March 25th, 2004, Bruce and Kelly gave photos of Brianna to the Vermont State Police. The state police, however, were skeptical that foul play was involved, given there was no signs of a violent confrontation at the scene where the car had been found, and they were considering her disappearance to be that of a runaway.
Well, don't they always?
Well, I mean, I don't understand their line of thinking when it comes to stuff like that. I mean, you just assume it's a runaway? Why don't you assume that it's foul play? I mean, that would make more sense to me.
Yeah, because at this point, she's been missing for 5 days. Or she was last seen 5 days before. So I don't understand that either. Now, despite this, I will say the Vermont police did initiate a cursory search. And they had brought in search dogs and off-duty police officers, on-duty police officers, searched around the barn.
You said duty.
Duty. But nothing else was found other than what we described at the car. Now, they did look into the house and found some drug paraphernalia and a gun. Now, I could not find anything regarding this gun, whether or not it came back as stolen, registered to someone, nothing. But at the time of Brianna's disappearance, the Dutch barn was kind of known for a little hangout where you could go, you know, kind of party and get some stuff you can't get on the at the pharmacist.
Ooh, you're talking about drugs?
Drugs.
Now, Brianna had been taking medication for migraines, which, remember, was left in the car, along with her contact lenses, most of her clothing, her makeup, and her driver's license, along with two checks totaling $150. If she was going to run away, she sure as heck wouldn't leave the checks or her contacts.
I would be 100% in agreement with that.
Police had felt like that this indicated to them that Brianna wanted to return to the vehicle at some point, or she had not abandoned the vehicle of her own free will. So we fast forward to March 30th of 2004, and the Oldsmobile was processed by the Vermont State Crime Lab. While they found no signs of a struggle in the car, it was later revealed that DNA had been found. They do not go into any details about the nature of this DNA or who it may belong to. Not long after discovering the DNA along with processing the car, Vermont state authorities would conclude that Brianna's disappearance was probably the result of something happening to her against her will. Now, several people would come forward to say that they had seen Brianna's vehicle on the night she went missing. According to one witness who drove by the barn between 11:30 p.m. and 12:30 a.m., he had seen headlights but not seen anyone in or around the car. Another witness would state that he had seen the turn signal flashing between midnight and 12:30 a.m.
But again, he's gonna claim that there was no one around.
Correct. And then we have Brianna's former boyfriend, James Robitel. I hope I'm saying that right.
Who cares?
And he was returning from a party across the Canadian border when he saw her car around 4 a.m. But, similar to the other witnesses, he did not see anyone around the car. Later on, James would state that he was drunk at the time, but did say that Brianna was nowhere around, which would lead you to believe that he pulled off the road to see if she was okay. So, over the years, official searches have been done, and they include divers searching the Berkshire Pond, which is close to the Dutch barn house. Police have searched the local wooded areas, the space around the Hutchins Bridge with cadaver dogs, and a court inquest also occurred, and officers with the Border Patrol utilized helicopters to cover a lot more land. Overall, the searches involved officers from three states and members of the Texas Equisearch. Now, Brianna's friends and family conducted their own searches of the area, put up missing flyer persons.
Missing flyer persons?
Yeah, I'm doing new English here. They put up missing persons flyers across Vermont and surrounding states. Her parents took matters into their own hands and followed up on leads that they had heard about across Vermont into New York, Quebec, and Connecticut. They even went to a strip club in Boston after receiving a call that Brianna was seen there, but it turned out to be a case of mistaken identity. So a month into the investigation, Brianna's dad, Bruce, sent a letter to Vermont governor at the time, James Douglas, stating that he felt the search had not been aggressive enough and that police were keeping him and his wife, Kelly, in the dark over the progress of the case. It was during this time that an anonymous tip came in that Brianna was being held against her will. And the Vermont State Police followed up on this tip and actually raided a home in Berkshire off of Reservoir Road.
Yeah, and they're going to find drugs. They're going to find illegal weapons, but they're not going to find Brianna.
No, and they find two fine, upstanding gentlemen who actually give them permission to search the house with drug paraphernalia just laying around. These are geniuses right here now. One of them's name was Ramon L. Rines.
Probably still is his name.
The other one is Nathaniel Charles Jackson, both of New York. And like Coach said, they found cocaine, weed, drug paraphernalia, illegal guns, but no trace of Brianna. Now, Nathaniel Jackson had seen Brianna the week before she disappeared, and the pair of geniuses were arrested on drug charges, and law enforcement hoped that the thought of some extended prison time would get them to share more information about what they may or may not know about Brianna. Now, allegedly, Ramon Rines cut a deal with the prosecution. He would tell them what he knew about Brianna for a lighter sentence. Neither the public nor Brianna's family were ever told what he offered, but he received 45 days with time served. And as of now, neither Rines or Jackson have been arrested in any relation to Brianna's case. Rines would eventually head back to New York after he was released, which brings into question another theory. At the time of Brianna's disappearance, women were being taken from Vermont to New York and placed into the sex trafficking underworld. Although no direct evidence has surfaced to point to Brianna being a victim of such. Now, we fast forward to February 17th of 2006, and there was an alleged sighting of Brianna at the Caesars World Casino in Atlantic City, New Jersey. And you can find this video on YouTube. It's very grainy, and it does show someone resembling Brianna at a poker table with a bald man. Unfortunately, the woman in the video has never been identified. Brianna's mom, Kelly, maintains that she does see a stronger resemblance between the woman in the video and Brianna. Now, we go to October of 2007 in a wooded area in Montgomery, Vermont, and a pair of weathered blue jeans had been found. Now, the area, which is approximately 7 miles from where Brianna went missing, had not been searched previously. The jeans were sent to the state forensic lab to be analyzed, but the results of the test have not officially been released, which leads some people to theorize that it may have some DNA evidence on it. So to help with the search for their missing daughter, Bruce and Kelly hired a private investigator, and his name was Mr. Greg Overacker. So the family would receive a lot of uncorroborated anonymous phone calls from people claiming that Brianna had been tied to a tree in the woods and her body disposed of at the bottom of a lake. In 2008, an expanded review of the investigation was conducted and a team was created that would solely be dedicated to Brianna's case. This meant that a more aggressive approach could be taken and more interviews were conducted. Some of those interviews were suspects or people that they had previously interviewed. In 2010, the Vermont State Police Search and Rescue Team, along with a canine unit, conducted a search off of Prive Hill Road in Richford, Vermont, but nothing was uncovered. In March of 2016, the information about the DNA discovered in Brianna's vehicle was made public. However, the test results were not released and have not been released. Over 4 years later, in September of 2020, the Vermont State Police Major Crime Unit teamed up with Othram Incorporated to re-examine the evidence. Now, Othram is the world's first private DNA lab built to apply modern parallel sequencing with forensic evidence. And they do touch DNA, they do the vacuum of the clothes, everything, trying to find any type of DNA. And that, basically, ladies and gentlemen, is the facts of the case. So now we get into the theories.
I don't understand. What could have possibly happened to her?
For her to just disappear within, and it sounds like she disappeared within, something happened within minutes. It's very similar to Maura Murray.
Yeah, and that's, I was going to bring that up. It's very, very much tied to the Maura Murray case because it happened a month after Maura Murray and only about 60 miles away.
And if you look at the time frame when people saw the car, when she got off work, we're talking 15, 20 minutes max. Now, that's a lot longer. That's double the time that I think it took Maura to disappear. I think hers was like between 5 and 7 minutes.
Yeah, it was a very short amount of time, and she was gone.
The first theory in the case that we'll discuss is that Brianna's disappearance was drug-related. Now, this is due to the fact that drugs were very prominent and are still very prominent in the Montgomery, Vermont area, along with Brianna's friends having stated that she was a self-proclaimed regular user of marijuana. You also have to keep in mind, in 2004, there was not any states in the grand old U.S. where marijuana was legal.
Yeah, but, I mean, are you going to abduct? You're going to kidnap? You're going to torture, murder? Whatever happened to her over marijuana?
I don't think so. But some of her friends would state that Brianna had told them she had experienced or experimented with harder drugs, specifically cocaine and crack. But again, if she had experimented with it, is different from having a severe problem. Now, this would lead some to speculate that Brianna could have been killed over a huge drug debt and her body was hidden to hide the crime. It should be noted that investigators have not been able to substantiate this theory, and her parents maintain she was not seriously involved in the drug scene. This is in direct conflict of them finding out about her friendships with the two drug dealers whose house they raided.
Yeah, but if you're going to kill someone over a drug debt, wouldn't you want
people to know?
People to know.
Right.
Yeah.
You're not hiding the body.
You're not going to hide the body. You want people to know that this is what happens
if you stiff us.
When you screw us over. Yeah. Exactly.
So in late 2004, investigators received a tip, this time from an anonymous female that implicated both Rhines and Jackson. Remember, those are the two geniuses that let the police come in and search their apartment, had all the drugs in it. The unknown woman stated that the pair had killed Brianna the week after her disappearance, after Rhines and her argued over money she had lent him so that he could purchase cocaine.
Mm.
After she was killed, the woman claims Brianna's body was dismembered with a table saw, then placed in a freezer, and then each piece was disposed of at a local pig farm. Police have been unable to corroborate any of this statement. And there was something that I either, there was a podcast I listened to or a video I watched on YouTube that they finally find the anonymous female caller, and she actually has a long rap sheet, and she either, if I'm not mistaken, she either shot her previous husband or she killed him. So I'm not so sure we're going to put a whole lot of water in that theory, but it is nice to get the old gears turning in your head. Now, another theory is that Brianna simply just left on her own accord and backed her car into that there barn. According to her friends, she had always mentioned that she wanted to leave the area. They also stated that law enforcement had previously stated she had a history of running away. which I couldn't find anything to substantiate that. All of that I just said would lead some people to theorize that she just left and started over. However, police have been unable to find any evidence to indicate that she left voluntarily, and they came out saying that something happened to her against her will. Also, if you are a chronic migraine sufferer, you're not leaving your migraine medicine behind.
I have never had migraines, but I'm assuming if
oh, they're
I
awful.
Did.
I've had would. four god-awful ones before. They're not good. Like, I want to kill someone. Also, you're not going to leave your contacts and two checks worth $150 if you're just going to go start over. That's money you can use to get out of the area. So I don't put any water in this theory either. Now, the third theory that I found, or the most prevalent of all the theories, I just put up three or four of them. Another theory is that Brianna was abducted by several people.
Well, that would make sense because of her jiu-jitsu training. It would be very difficult, depending on how much she trained and how good she was, it would be very difficult for one person to subdue her.
And that's exactly what her parents said. Her parents would say that with her history in jiu-jitsu, there's no way one person could subdue her unless...
I just know for a fact that it's going to take more than one person to subdue me.
Unless they had a weapon. Unless they're pointing a gun at
you. Well, if they point a gun at me, I'll probably shut the fuck up and do whatever they say.
But that's exactly, you know, what her parents would say is, you know, knowing that she was trained in jiu-jitsu, it's going to be more than one person. The parents believe that someone may have spotted her and became obsessed with her while she either worked at one of her jobs and followed her to the Black Lantern that evening and hid in her back seat and waited until she left and popped up and made her pull over at the Dutch Barn house.
I can see that as a possibility for sure.
Now, from what I've not seen photographs, but from the description of her car, it looks like someone that was homeless. Like, everything she ever owned was in it, so it would not be that difficult to hide.
I'm sorry, but that's what my car looks like right now.
And you're not homeless.
I am not homeless, but my car looks like I am.
We're going to circle back.
And we kind of touched on this about Maura Murray, and this is one of the bigger, more popular theories. And they think that, and even Brianna's parents teamed up with Maura's parents, and also those of Amy Riley, a 20-year-old New Hampshire woman whose murdered body had been found in April of that year.
Oh, wow.
So you've got Maura Murray going missing in February. You've got Brianna going missing in March. And then you have Amy Riley, who was murdered and her body found in April of the same year. So all of these families teamed up together and tried at the time to state that these cases could possibly be connected, and they wanted the FBI to become involved since they crossed state lines. FBI agents did meet with local authorities to discuss the possible links between the cases, including the fact that both Maura and Brianna had gone missing after a car accident. They both left their belongings behind, and that they were both attractive young brown-haired women. However, it was eventually concluded that despite the similarities that I just discussed, the cases were not connected. But it should be noted that this theory has not been entirely ruled out by local law enforcement. So there must be something that they're holding back from the public that leads them to believe there may still be something to it. Now, another theory that was very popular when she went, or I'm sorry, that was very popular in 2012 was that Brianna was a victim of Israel Keyes. And if you don't know who he was a serial killer who left these little murder kits all over the country.
He's an asshole.
Yeah. It says he had committed crimes in Vermont, New York, and Alaska, Washington, and Oregon, but his financial records stated that he was nowhere near where Brianna was at when she went missing. Now, a lady who believes that Brianna owed someone a lot of money, and this is Miss Katie Manning, and she states that it is known that before her disappearance, she was at the local mall with her mother, which we discussed at the beginning. And as they waited at the checkout counter, something outside the store caught Brianna's attention. The person she owed money to, either like she had borrowed it for something or she owed drug money, was following her around that day trying to intimidate her, hoping that she would pay them back. Brianna tells her mother she would be right back, and she walks out into the parking lot. So Brianna approached the person and tried to reason with them, hoping that she could get more time to pay the money back. This did not work. The person threatened violence if Brianna did not pay them the money. And when her mother had completed her purchase and left the store, she sees Brianna in the parking lot. And by this time, the person that made the threats is gone. This would explain why Brianna was quiet, upset, and distant as her mother drove her back to her friend's house.
I mean, that does make sense. I mean, if we're going to pinpoint any theory, I'm thinking this is the one that makes the most sense to me.
Yeah. On Friday, March 19th, sometime after the encounter in the parking lot and the warning, Brianna left Jillian the note that said that she would return after work that evening. At 11:20 p.m., she told her coworkers she needed to get home to rest before working the next day. She was seen leaving the restaurant by one or more coworkers, by all appearances, alone in her car. However, this lady, Katie Manning, says she was not alone. Someone was lying in wait in the rear seats, or possibly in the area between the rear seats and the front seats,
which would be the floorboard.
The person was waiting there until Brianna's shift was over. It was almost midnight, making it quite easy for this person to not get noticed. On the way back home, the person emerged from the rear seats and either struck her or pulled out a weapon. I'm thinking they pulled out a weapon.
Yeah, but, I mean, if that's true, where did they go? How did they get away from the car? Where did they take her? There's no signs of foul play. There's no evidence to indicate that there was somebody there.
Correct. Now, this lady goes further, and she says that in the rural areas of Vermont, no one would notice a struggle, especially on some back road at midnight. Brianna and her attacker drove to the Dutchburn house. At gunpoint, Brianna was forced to park the car backwards into the farmhouse. Now, it would look very suspicious as if a struggle occurred and the car crashed into the farmhouse, a frontal collision. But by making her back it into the house, it just looked like she was trying to turn around and got the car stuck. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know about that.
Now, the attacker...
That's far-fetched to me.
The attacker forced Brianna out of the car. She had to leave all of her belongings in the car, and it would look less suspicious and more like possible planned suicide / a planned runaway if she left all of her belongings there. The attacker then walked Brianna through the fields toward the Trout River, approximately 500 yards to the southwest of the Dutchburn house, and it was on the riverbanks out of the sight of anyone where her attacker shot her. The nearby forest was a perfect place to dump the body. The river would not be an ideal place since eventually she would emerge from the water. This lady theorizes that the killer dug a hole and dumped her there. So to summarize that all of that crap I just read, Brianna owed somebody, specifically the wrong person, a large amount of money. The person talks to her and confronts her in the parking lot. Then during her shift, they hide in her car, force her to drive to the Dutchburn house, and then she's forced to walk to the nearby river where she is killed and disposed of along the riverbanks. And that is the theory of Miss Katie Manning.
I mean, it makes a little bit of sense. I mean, I don't know how they would have disposed of her body and got, I mean, I don't know how they pulled that off and had no evidence whatsoever.
Well, and the other thing is they brought in cadaver dogs and searched the immediate area around the Dutchburn house, but did they go far enough? Yeah, I guess is my question. That might. But with that theory being out there and easily found by myself, I'm sure authorities have followed up on that, you would
think.
Surely,
yeah.
Now, there have been many Facebook pages set up to help raise awareness about Brianna's case. Her parents set up a Brianna Maitland missing family page, which they have not updated since the mid, I'd say around this time, 2019. The other one, titled Brianna Maitland, is still actively updated. Now, Brianna's case was part of Project Jason's 18-Wheel Angel campaign, which targeted truck drivers and business travelers to volunteer their resources and time to help spread the word about missing persons via printable flyers.
That's cool.
There are vigils held every year on the anniversary of Brianna's disappearance where her family and members of the community come together to bring about renewed awareness and to talk about the ongoing investigation. Now, unfortunately, Brianna's parents have since separated, and her mother, Kelly, is now living in New York. Bruce, her father, wanting to make something good out of his daughter's disappearance, created Private Investigations for the Missing. It is a nonprofit dedicated to providing private investigators to those who are unable to afford them. There is an active GoFundMe page where supporters can donate to his organization. In July of 2016, the old Dutchburn house was destroyed in a fire. Now, a little back history on the Dutchburn house. There were two brothers that lived there, and they were killed inside the house by home invasion.
Oh, wow.
Brianna's case has received national media attention. It has been featured on Dateline NBC, on an episode of Disappeared, and several other television programs, along with several podcasts. Brianna Maitland went missing from Montgomery, Vermont, but it should be noted that some agencies state her disappearance occurred in East Franklin or Sheldon. She was 17 years old at the time. She stood 5'3" to 5'5", weighed between 105 and 118 pounds. She had brown hair and hazel eyes. She has a faint scar extending from her left eyebrow to her forehead, and her left nostril is pierced. According to reports, she was wearing either a small ring or a stud in her nose at the time. Those with any information regarding this case are asked to contact the Vermont State Police at 802-524-5993, or they can call the Official Investigations tip line at 802-241-5355. So, now we get into our theories. I don't know. I don't know about the Owen drug money. I mean, on one hand, you have a young lady who's 17 that's working two jobs, but that could just be she's trying to save up for her own place. She's been couch surfing. She doesn't want to keep imposing on her friend Jillian. But on the same token, you've got, I mean, that is, you know, kind of leads credence to maybe she did owe money. She's working two jobs, but I personally don't think that's the case.
Well, then what else could there be? I mean,
I don't know. See, that's what's so odd. I mean,
I think she was taken.
I do too.
She didn't just wreck her car and run off into the woods and blah, 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 blah.
And from all,
she was taken.
From everything I read and researched, her car was in operating condition. Like, it didn't have dead battery, wasn't out of gas. There was nothing mechanically wrong with it to keep it from, for her, something didn't happen so that she had to pull over.
Correct.
So I agree. Either, and now I do like the fact that someone could have hid in the back seat. A lot of people piss on that theory by saying, man, it was 8 degrees that night. Well, they don't have to stay in a non-heated car the whole time. They just got to know. They could have went in and had a to-go order. Well, what time do y'all close?
Yeah.
And then they will know. Employees probably get off 30 minutes later, so.
I can't disregard that theory. I think it has some sort of
I almost like the she let the wrong person borrow money. And she was trying, she may have been trying to save up for her own place or leave the area to go to college. And she started putting pressure on them. And she may have, let's go with, and I'm just going to chase this one. She may have seen that person driving through the parking lot when her mom's checking out. And so she goes out there and she confronts them and says, hey, man, where's my money? Well, then they turn around and make a threat against her. If you don't stop asking for your money, I'm going to kill you.
No.
And now that upsets her. Like, look, I thought we were friends. I just need my money.
Yeah.
And that explains why she was upset. I like that theory more than I do she's some kind of underworld drug mule. But, I mean, you know, there was a pipeline from Vermont to Boston and New York trafficking girls. I mean, she could have unfortunately found herself in a situation where she was trafficked. Can't rule that out. I don't know, man. This is a head scratcher. This one, there's so many theories out there. It's kind of like Maura Murray. Everyone's got their theory on the case, and they're going to stick by it. I don't know, man. It's just so odd that that car was seen probably starting within 15 minutes of her passing the barn. I mean, there was a small window, but I don't know.
I mean, What amount of money could we be talking about that would justify killing someone?
See, that's what I don't understand either. And it's not like she, if you follow mine, she wouldn't have more than $3,000. You wouldn't think.
I wouldn't think. Heck no.
I mean, she's couch surfing. $3,000 to get you rent.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, man. That's what I can't. And it's not like she had a cocaine problem. You know, it is well known that she smoked marijuana, but you'd have to smoke a lot of marijuana for someone to kill you.
Yeah, I mean.
Now, there was a theory that I read about that said that she had approached those two geniuses and stated that she could sell some product. And so they went out on a limb, bought the product, and then she's having a hard time selling it. But that still doesn't explain why, like you said, if you're going to kill someone over drugs, you want people to know, hey, you cross us, this is what happens. So I don't know. I'm at a loss, to be honest with you.
Me as well, man. None of it makes sense for her to just completely disappear with
no trace.
No trace. There's not been a single sighting of her. There has been no evidence, nothing, since the day it happened.
And it's like it's very similar to a missing 411 where there is no dogs can't track her. I'm not saying that it's a 411 case.
No, I get what you're saying.
But there's nothing there. You know, I've read that the necklace that they found may or may not be hers. I read that the jacket they found may or may not be hers. Then I had read where some women's underwear was found in a ditch less than half a mile away. That could have been hers. But, here's what I don't understand. The thing where they cut the deal with one of the geniuses, I don't think he knew anything. I think he may have led them. He may have given them a tip. Hey, y'all might want to go look here, or I heard this. And they were like, okay, we'll cut you loose at 45 days served. I don't think that he, spilt the beans and told them who killed him.
Yeah.
Because there's a law that states you can't offer a deal without contacting the victim's family.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And that's a big thing right now going on it was a big thing in the Epstein case because the federal government gave that fucker a sweetheart deal. And there's a huge push right now that they think in the Rebecca Gould case that the Arkansas state prosecutors have offered the guy that confessed, the cousin of her boyfriend at the time, they think they've offered him a sweetheart deal, but no one's talking. And it's gone as far in that case as Rebecca's dad has written a formal letter to the prosecutors and the governor stating that he will not support any deal. So Yeah, I mean, this case is frustrating. This case is as frustrating as Maura Murray's case. It is, I don't feel like it is as well known. It is well known in true crime circles, but it's not, doesn't go into the general, you know. I think most everyone's heard of Maura Murray. Not a lot of people that don't follow true crime have heard of Breonna Maitland.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, everyone's heard of Maura Murray.
Yeah.
Everyone. But maybe her case, Breonna's case, was overshadowed by Maura's a little.
I think it was, like you stated, it happened a month after. And then, you know, I don't know. It's just, it's odd, man. I mean, we can sit here the rest of the day and speculate, but we'll get into recommendations now.
Ooh.
I have a recommendation that if you were interested in our previous episode on Karen Silkwood, that you look into the book and read it by Richard Rashke, The Killing of Karen Silkwood.
I'm going to recommend the YouTube page Dark Five. They have been putting out some fantastic videos lately.
I agree. So, I haven't been watching those as well. They are pretty good.
So check that out and give it a look-see.
Well, Coach, you got anything else?
I do not.
Well, thank you for coming. And deuces.